This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So yesterday on a podcast we talked about the Indian variant, and back then it was just one sage advisor making some warnings about it. But today perhaps there's a bit more movement on the government side. Katie, can you tell us what's the latest of the government thinking on the Indian variant?
There's some thinking. Ultimately, I think that we've seen from the story which the iPaper had first yesterday about how Sage, there was some concern in Sage about this Indian variant. I think we're now seeing a ramping up of that. Now, you have various, you know, members of Sage, you've got some scientific advisors out in the media ultimately making the point that this could, you know, cause problems. Should you really be continuing with the relaxation? I think Dominic Cummings has retweeted one such, which means, you know, that the headlines now about the fact that Dominic Cummings is along those saying that it could throw the roadmap in doubt. In terms of the government, though, the message hasn't really changed. You've got a situation where ministers out this morning are still saying they see no reason currently why it will throw off the easing, and obviously for the first easing on Monday, but also that's even in relation to the June 21st easing. I think it's worth pointing out that the June 21st easing hasn't been signed off yet. That will be much nearer the time. So everything in terms of whether it shouldn't go ahead or it should go ahead is take it with a bit of a pinch of salt. We're not near that point for decision making yet, and won't be for a while. Where I think the focus now is how is the government going to respond to a spike in infections in places like Bolton when it comes to this variant, and what is being discussed, the idea of surge vaccinations. And there are various ideas. So this could be making sure more people get their second dose more quickly in these areas, and it could also be offering it to younger people in these areas, particularly multi-generational households, because what they're trying to do is break up the chain of circulation. I think if listeners want some fairly positive news in all this, A, the fact that there's still no evidence suggests that, you know, vaccines don't work against Indian variant. The concern that scientists and epidemiologists are citing, and it's not a majority view yet, is about a rise in cases. It's not about deaths yet. And two, if you look at, I think there's a good chart from the FT's John Burr Murdoch, which points out that in places like Bolton, the spike in cases is very much in these younger age groups, and you're not really seeing much at all in terms of a rise at the moment in the 60s and overs. Now, that suggests that ultimately the vaccines are having their effect, and this is because this is about the unvaccinated groups and the circulation. So I think there are still lots of levers the government can pull before we say, you know, the variant is throwing everything off course.
James, talk us through how the sort of surge testing that's definitely happening ahead at the moment, how surge vaccinations could work, and could there be local lockdowns?
There's obviously a case for surge testing. I also think, as Katie said, there's a very strong case for surge vaccinations in these places. If the worry is that this Indian variant is more transmissible, which is the worry of some scientists, surge vaccination seems like a sensible response. I also think that, you know, that again, if this variant remains geographically concentrated, there's obviously a case for taking a slightly different local approach to national approach. The government is, I think, will be reluctant to go down that route, given that, you know, I mean, the view in government is that with the benefit of hindsight, the tier system became too confusing and the like. I think in terms of the impact on the roadmap, there are different versions of June 21st. There's a version of June 21st when the legal limit on gathering size goes, but social distancing remains in place. So restaurants and pubs are still not able to operate at full capacity because they're having to have a metre or a metre and a half between tables. People are still wearing masks inside shops. That's one version of June 21st. The version of June 21st that the government was talking about, kind of sotto voce earlier this week, was social distancing going, masks going everywhere except, you know, public transport. And that is obviously much more like normal. And I think probably what we're seeing with the at the moment is government people are stopping even in private talking about that kind of slightly more hopeful June 21st scenario while they see how this plays out. And I think a lot of the question is, what growth in the Indian variant do you see? We have, you know, the UK does a huge amount of genetic sequencing of the virus, which means that the government has pretty good data on which version of COVID, if you see what I mean, people are getting. And up to now, in a kind of paradoxical way, the UK has been relatively protected from variants by how infectious the Kentish variant is. It's made it hard for any kind of rival to get going. The question is whether the Indian variant is more transmissible and therefore can kind of elbow the Kentish variant out the way or not.
But Katie, you know, none of us are epidemiologists here, but if the Indian variant is more transmissible but not more fatal, as no evidence seems to be showing, and that is not vaccine confounding, what's the problem in people getting more of these cases if they are vaccinated because no vaccine is 100% effective?
Well, I think we get back to this point, which is you look at stage projections and, you know, if it's spreading at a faster rate, what does that mean in terms of those who have said no to the vaccine or haven't been vaccinated yet? And we know that all these more vulnerable groups have been offered the vaccine, but not everyone has taken that. And I think it's going to probably draw more attention on vaccine hesitancy. And then I think that one of the arguments you often hear is, well, if it's spreading fast, then that could lead to more variants. But I think the tricky thing with that is ultimately, until the pandemic is over all across the world, we're not going to stop variants. And we've seen with the border policy, for all the government's talk of a strict border policy, it was Boris Johnson who ultimately, I think at the time, was widely reported to be resistant to India being on the red list, because we know that Boris Johnson wanted to go to India on his trip, and for several days or weeks before, you know, before that, when first news about India was coming up and worrying data, the government kept being asked, when are you going to put India on the red list, and kept pushing it. And then I think it was only on the day, I think it was a Monday, where all of a sudden we are told Boris Johnson's trip has been cancelled, and then a few hours later it got added to the red list. So I think it's going to draw attention onto this type of thing. I think that unless the government wants to have a completely strict border policy, and there are lots of problems with it in terms of how Australia and New Zealand do it, we are going to have a situation where there are variants abroad. They are going to somehow make it in here. And therefore, I think we're going to have to probably have a more open conversation about what is the exact strategy of the government. Because when they unveiled their roadmap, I think they thought through the fast vaccination programme and going for everyone so quick, you kind of avoid the topic of whether it's just about protecting the vulnerable and then getting out there, which is the COVID recovery group, or if it's the more sage view, which is circulation, which is below a very low level, is worrying and we need to crack down on that. And I imagine next week we'll hopefully hear people pressed, actually, and we can discuss in more detail whether, if you believe it's cases rather than hospitalisation and deaths that should be focused on, I think the government, or those advising the government, are going to have to flesh out why they really think that is such a concern. Because I think the common sense reaction would often be, well, if it's not causing a strain on this, and yes, when it circulates, it can often lead to then a strain on hospitals, hospitalisations, but we have had a big vaccination program, and that's been so encouraging in terms of building up immunity. We are in a different world than we were a year ago.
And James Westminster Wise, Howard Beckett, a trade unionist who was in line to be the next General Secretary of Unite, has been suspended from the Labour Party for some comments he made about Priti Patel on Twitter, saying that she should be the one getting deported. What do you make of it? Is it the latest phase of Keir Starmer getting rid of all the trade unionists?
So this was that basically followed an attempt by the Home Office to pick up two people in Glasgow yesterday who are, I think, Indian nationals who the government believed to be here illegally and were trying to remove them from the country. A whole bunch of people in Glasgow came out to protest this. Nicola Sturgeon made clear that she didn't like this. She didn't agree with them trying to remove these people and said it was kind of insensitive to do it on Eid. And Police Scotland then released these people back into the community, to kind of calm the situation down. Commenting on this, how Beckett said that, it should be Priti Patel who's been deported, which is obviously pretty insensitive considering that Priti Patel's parents are Ugandan Asians. And so I think the tweet was crass and stupid. I also think there's little love lost between him and some people around Keir Starmer, which perhaps explains the speed with which the suspension was issued.
Katie, you've had, in response to this, people like Eamon Jones on Twitter coming out and saying that the store was storming a teacup and that the suspension is an overreaction. What do you think? Was it an overreaction?
I think it was interesting in reaction to the party party's decision to suspend Howard Beckett is that it's not just those on the left. So you mentioned people like Owen Jones, but you also have those who are seen to be on the right of the party. So former Labour MP John Woodcock, who has, you know, taken to social media to ultimately question whether Labour will end up reinforcing its lack of connection with swathes of the public if it casts people out on a hair trigger like this, you know, regardless of apology for the offensive statement. Because there has been an apology, they move very quickly. And I think it also just points to the fact that it has been a very bruising week for Keir Starmer. And I think that the decision, something is the right decision, but his authority has been undermined this week, and I think it does make it hard of him when he does make decisions such as this.
And James, finally, today the Prime Minister is meeting the Irish Taoiseach Micheál Martin for a working lunch to discuss the Northern Ireland Protocol. What are they going to be talking about and what will come out of it?
So, I mean, it's fascinating that they are having this lunch as the DUP is having its leadership contest. You know, Arlene Foster is basically being forced out as First Minister and leader of the DUP because of the protocol, and unionist opposition to the protocol is hardening. Recent polls suggest that 48% of people wanted to scrap the protocol, 46% of people wanted to keep it. I think unionist concern is going to be heightened by a story in today's Times that there's a drug that's used to treat lung cancer that is approved for use in Great Britain, but not yet in Northern Ireland because of the way the protocol works. And so I think the question is, can you deal with some way of coming up with these tensions? I think the only hope London has of persuading the EU to move is if it can get Dublin to basically say yes, that the protocol needs to change. I think the problem is that during the negotiations, the emphasis was that the protocol was meant to be about both protecting the Good Friday Agreement and the integrity of the single market. I think the problem is right now is he's clearly in destabilising the Good Friday Agreement, I think you can say, in the level of unionist unease and upset it is causing. But the problem is the EU view, I think the integrity of a single market point is increasing. And so we are back in this classic argument. The EU say, well, look, there's an easy way to reduce the number of checks. You just align with our rules on agriculture and SBS, and that would deal with a lot of the problems. The British government saying, no, we don't want to do that because we've left the EU to do things differently. So all of this tension is coming. I mean, Micheál Martin is a pragmatic Irish Taoiseach. And I think the big question is whether he and Boris Johnson can get to some shared position that they can present to the EU, because ultimately right now the UK and the EU are so far apart on the protocol. I think that we are heading for very, very choppy waters in the next month or so, unless an agreement between London and Dublin wouldn't solve the problem, but it would offer a potential route through.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And actually, we did a very interesting podcast with Kate Andrews and Jeremy Hunt, the chair of the Health Select Committee, about Northern Ireland's problems when it comes to Brexit and healthcare. So you can tune into that. I'll put a link in the description as well. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.